Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about our evolving, awakening consciousness and how we as a collective civilization are moving together into a new way of connecting with each other, a new way of relating to the environment and the unfolding nature of reality. I'll just say that. And tonight's guests are very much about this evolution. Sarah and Tano are going to be teaching a sexology workshop in New York City, and they have a lot of interesting techniques to share with us and a lot of new ideas about how we can interact with each other as a total being. So tonight's guests are Sarah Barab and Tano DiCarlo. Welcome to the show. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
Thanks, Alan.
So, Sarah, why don't you talk a little bit about the upcoming workshop and then how you met Tano, and then Tano could talk about the foundations of his sexology, okay?
Sure.
So, yes.
Tano and I are teaching together in New York City at a place called She Creates Change in Chelsea beginning April 26th, and it's an all-day Saturday, all day Sunday, and evening on Friday weekend workshop. We're trying to pack a lot of information into one weekend, and it's very exciting because Tano and I have known each other since we were in high school, and we've been developing this workshop for over a year, and it's very exciting that we're finally launching it together. Mm-hmm. Tano is going to be covering most of the sexology techniques, and I'm going to be leading the meditation and gentle yoga and some partner stretching as well.
Okay, so let's talk about what is sexology. I mean, it's the study of sex in a way, but Tano is connected to the Taoist tradition. So we got into a little bit before the show. We were kind of discussing the finer points of Taoist sexology. But Tano, why don't you give us a kind of overview of what that's about?
Okay, I mean, most people, when they first hear of sexology, they think it's just about sexual practice with another person. But the reality is it's very much about taking your sexual energy, which is the vital primal force in your body, and learning to cultivate it and circulate it through your body to increase your health, your vigor, and your overall physical and mental happiness.
Okay, So, and this is done with, I mean, as we said before, done with partners or by yourself, right? I mean.
Yes, well, I definitely think there's certain stages that are very important. And a partner stage is a secondary stage that I don't believe should be practiced until a person has first learned how to circulate and cultivate their own energies. And in order to do that, it's, first of all, it's about stopping a certain level of depletion in the human body. And by depletion, I mean that we waste a lot of our vital energy, and an energy that isn't with us for our entire life. As you see with people getting older, they tend to lose this sort of vigor and vitality. And the Taoists believe that the reason for that is because their sexual energy, which is their vital primal energy, gets depleted over time and is not cultivated. And so you lose an overall sense of liveliness and vitality.
Is that just through ejaculation, or are there other ways that our sexual energy is depleted?
There is. So the number one reason, the biggest thing, is ejaculation in men. But the number one reason is a lack of circulation of the energy. Because if the energy just stays stagnant in the sexual glands, the body doesn't have any need to reproduce or strengthen anymore, because they don't want to have an imbalance in the body. Too much stagnation of sexual energy in the body will send off an alarm in the body saying, well, don't cultivate any more of this energy because it'll overall be bad for the body.
I see. So circulating is what Mata Chia was teaching as the microcosmic orbit, which is a pulling or a meditation or a kind of visualization, in a sense, of the energy moving up the spine and down the front and circulating like that. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely an essential prerequisite. You cannot do sexology until you open those front and back channels of the body. And it does begin as a visualization, but in time it becomes an extremely tangible reality where you know that you're actually physically pulling up the energy in your body. Like, for example, a man with, let's say, in sexual intercourse or ejaculation, his testicles will fill up with sperm and energy. And the ability to pull that energy out of the testicles, which you'll see the reality of the testicles deflate as if you had ejaculated, and then to be able to pull that energy up the body and then direct it either just down the front channel or to specific areas of the body becomes something that you can completely fill, and you can pull it up the body and send it right back down to the testicles to fill it back up.
And how long have you been practicing this and developed these techniques? Because, like, as you told me before the show, you looked for good teachers, and you really have developed this through your own knowledge, through your own experimenting with your own body, which I think is amazing. And so how long has this been going on for you?
I've been doing this for 20 years. I'm 40 now. I started when I was 20. And I did it very selfishly. I didn't understand the process too much. I was a martial artist at the time. And a circle of martial artists that I knew had mentioned that this was a method of increasing internal power. So I approached it with that selfish desire for just increasing my martial abilities and sought out the instruction of the few people I knew that had been practicing it, and then sought out books and videos and anything I could find that could help me learn it. And it took me an entire year to learn how to do it. And when I say to learn how to do it, to reach the stage where my front and back channels were open and I was able to successfully pull an ejaculation up my spine and then circulate it down the front of my body.
But, you know, the internal, just from my experience, it seems like the internal ejaculations are not as they're not as intense. I mean, that, you know, by ejaculating, there's a kind of rush of pleasure and boom, it's over. The internals, at least what I've noticed, are different. The sensations are different. It could be as pleasurable, but it's a whole different thing. Is that your experience?
Not at all. My experience is that is by far more pleasurable than anything I've had in an ejaculatory orgasm. And selfishly speaking, being a 21-year-old learning to do it when I first began, I would not have substituted a lesser pleasure for the sake of internal practice. I mean, now in my wisdom I would, but at that age I wouldn't. I find, even up to this day, that the pleasure increases. The better you get at it, the more you can circulate it, the more power you can pull up, and the more you can direct that pleasure to different parts of your body, the more it increases.
So, and if I may interject,
yes, please.
I want to say from the woman's perspective, having been with men that, you know, ejaculate and men that are practicing Taoist sexology and ejaculate and actually don't release sperm and semen when they have an orgasm, there's such a huge difference. For one, sex can go on for hours longer. Uh-huh. There's such a feeling of intimacy that's created. It changes the entire sexual experience, because it's no longer about reaching some high moment or finish line. Mm-hmm. So often sex can be a sense of, okay, we have to get there. We're trying to get somewhere. We're trying to get to orgasm. Or that's the final goal.
Right.
And this changes the whole name of the game, because suddenly sexual experience is no longer about reaching anything that is just a one-time flash of pleasure and then you fall into exhaustion, at least for men. I mean, most of the time they fall into exhaustion and hunger and so forth.
Well,
and
because they've depleted their life force. I mean, I totally
absolutely
agree. Yeah,
absolutely. It's so much richer and deeper from the woman's perspective when that's just not happening.
And in the dual practice, so the men are bringing it up the back channels and down the front, and the women are too. Is that true, Sarah? And
it,
Tano?
Yeah, if I may interject, it's very true. If I just give you a brief example of what a sexual intercourse interaction is with this practice, it would be, one, the pleasure that I'm experiencing is building up in me, and it's causing, let's say, a peak in my testicles that would make me feel the need to trigger an ejaculation. That would be the normal practice. But as that's building up in me, I can pull bits and pieces of it through my orbit, down my body, and maintain this building of pleasure. And when I maintain this building of pleasure and I prevent a peak from occurring, I get a larger capacity for pleasure. And so I can choose to let me not ejaculate and maintain the pleasure that's being exchanged between us. And by connecting the vagina and the penis and the two tongues, you create an infinity cycle of an orbit where they have their orbit moving and you have your orbit moving, and you're exchanging energies on this infinity figure eight, for lack of a better term, cycle between us. And then when an orgasm, let's say, is decided upon, because it very much becomes a decision, I can decide if I want to have an orgasm in 10 minutes or in 2 hours. And, of course, the two-hour orgasm that comes later is going to be so much stronger because we've exchanged so much energy and we've built up a larger capacity of pleasure. Mm-hmm. And then when the orgasm is going to occur, I can then pull up that peak. So instead of it exploding out of my penis, I literally have the pleasure of it exploding up my spine. Mm-hmm. And then reaching my crown chakra, and the explosion becomes the top of my head, like right into my brain. And then I can direct that energy as well as that pleasure, because they work simultaneously, into any of my organs or any of my chakras, or through my tongue, into my partner, and feed her with that orgasmic energy. And her doing the same thing, we have this exchange where we're both sending each other our orgasmic pleasures and revitalizing and healing each other in the process. And immediately after a sexual experience of that nature, I do not feel the need to eat. I could not rest if I wanted to. I feel like running a triathlon. I feel healthier, stronger, younger, more intelligent, more vibrant. And this feeling just lasts. It lasts for a very long time. And I can, and then as the energy comes back down into my sexual centers, I feel ready to have another sexual intercourse whenever I decide, right after it reaches to come back down.
That sounds really exciting, and you're going to be teaching exactly that at this upcoming workshop. Isn't that true?
Yes.
I see. What,
one of the things that we're going to be teaching, yes.
Well, what else are you going to be teaching? I mean, that sounds like an amazing process.
Well, that right there, it's an amazing place to get to that place. But outside of it just being about sexual pleasure, I think the crisis is that I feel that occurs is that people are not holding on and protecting their most vital treasure, which is their pure energy, their youthful, vigorous, vital energy. And people are depleting it. And those depletions get recognized in depression, lack of energy, lack of focus, lack of desire, lack of enjoyment, all these things that we see in society that could literally be prevented.
Exactly. Well, what is depleting it? It's not just ejaculate. I mean, what I think is depleting it is like the overuse of drugs, recreational drugs. I think the ayahuasca epidemic that's going on is depleting a lot of sexual energy. I mean, it's just my opinion, because it really burns your serotonin levels, which is the result of increased sexual energy. I mean, what do you think?
Okay, I agree with you, Alan, and I see those things as being external causes of depletion.
Right.
And from an Eastern perspective, you want to start from the core, from the center, and build outwards. So when you want to fix problems, you try to go to what is the core problem, the deepest level. And the deepest level before we reach external depletions is an internal depletion. An internal depletion really is a muscle that is not used, gets weaker and weaker and weaker. And the vitality muscle in our body that isn't being used is getting weaker and weaker in people.
What's that?
And the vitality muscle is triggering in men your prostate and women your ovaries, triggering the production of this vital energy in your body.
How do you then work with that? I mean, like...
Well, there are numerous exercises. There's quite a few exercises that we have probably about 9 exercises in the course focused just on revitalizing and cultivating this energy in the body. But you do specific little exercises that stimulate the growth of this vital energy in your body. And then you learn how to circulate that vital energy in your body. And all of this is a prerequisite to dealing with orgasmic energy. Mm-hmm. Because you have 3 different types of energy that are in your body that you want to learn to cultivate. The first one is going to be a passive energy, an energy that's not in an aroused state, but it's energy that's of your vital essence of either your ovaries or your testicles that you then pull up your body to constantly feed you. Then you have a secondary type of energy, which is an aroused energy. And that aroused energy is very powerful, it's very yang, it's very hot, and you pull that up your body and learn to circulate that. Now, both of those two are prerequisites for learning the art of orgasmic energy. Now, orgasmic energy is very different in nature than any other energy in the body. And most people never experience it in their entire lives because all of their orgasmic energy is just thrown away out of their body. Mm-hmm. When you have orgasmic energy, you have this extreme yang energy that is pulled up your body. And when it passes your dantian, which is your navel center and a strong heat source, it chemically changes from that heat as you move it up your spine. And then it turns from this vital energy substance into a different type of chemical substance in the body. And then that substance, it's pulled up to your brain, which is cooled off by all of the cranial secretions in your body. And then that substance in its own alchemetic form is changed into this elixir. And this elixir is a very powerful substance that you then use to feed your body.
I see. So you need to, so let me recap then. You have these first two energies, the unaroused state, the aroused state, and then as you get towards the orgasmic state, you're pulling that up and using it as a transmuting agent. So then, Sarah, are you working with partners in this course, or how are people actually getting to that orgasmic energy peak?
Well, what Tano and I will be teaching, this particular course is for both couples and single people. And we're going to be teaching, Tano in particular is going to be teaching men how to practice by themselves and with partners. What we're teaching women will also, the women will be able to practice a lot of the exercises on their own if they're not in a relationship. Of course, if you have a sexual partner, it's helpful, but it's not necessary.
How are you going to get people to the orgasmic state? Just curious. That's a big part.
Oh, I can interject for that one. A great deal of the practice requires masturbation. Okay. And it's an ironic thing, but it becomes the fact that you learn to cultivate your own orgasmic energy and circulate that energy through your own body so that you can feed and empower yourself. After you're able to do that, you're able to do it with a partner in sexual pleasure.
Right, so I see. So it's self-stimulation to the point where you're working, and then I suppose the partner's energy really changes that, really transmutes that
drastically.
Power.
Yes, Alan, drastically changes it. The biggest danger that I found with students is that they want to jump to a partner orgasmic energy right away. And one of the dangers is that if they haven't done it, it's like any sort of kung fu or any sort of martial arts where the basics are the foundation of everything you do. And if you skip that, nothing else you build upon will be strong. So when people jump to the orgasmic partner energy, they'll have this intense feeling, this pleasure that has no boundaries of how intense it can get depending on your connection with your partner. And they'll pull it into their bodies or into the partner's bodies, and they'll attempt to circulate it. But if there are any blockages in their channels that aren't open, then that energy gets stuck there and stagnant in that place and causes an immediate imbalance, and the body, in all its divine wisdom, finds a way to balance it out for you. but you don't get the experience of the results because you've burnt yourself out by trying to take in more energy than you can handle at one time. So the very basics that we teach at first are in order to protect yourself from that. You learn that with your own energies. And once you're capable of moving your own energy in your body without any interruption, you're then able to explore the boundless orgasmic energy that you experience with a partner.
Well, do you integrate the use of breath? Because I find that in Taoist practices, it's when you breathe it up, what's also called the cobra breath, is mm-hmm. a big part of maintaining that energy.
It is definitely essential because there's many ways that energy can be released in your body. And as you know, breath is one of those ways. So you want to control your breath so that you use it to your own benefit for cultivating energy and you're not allowing it to deplete that energy.
So, Sarah, where does the meditation fit in the practices that you'll share in conjunction with the sexology work?
So a lot of my work in the world is teaching meditation, and I am also a filmmaker, and I'm making a film about meditation, and it's definitely my passion in life. And Tano and I have discussed the importance of bringing people into a calm internal state before they're learning these exercises. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of excitement around sexuality in general, and nervousness and shyness about talking about it openly and so forth. And so the meditation is going to be in part to help bring people into a grounded, centered place in their own bodies. And also because I think it's important to relate to one's own internal experience when learning sexology. If you're not in touch with your own body and your breath, in your body and have a sense of even emotional awareness and awareness of what you're thinking, it's not helpful to jump to sexual techniques. Mm-hmm. So the meditation is going to be to create a ground. And then we're also going to have gentle yoga exercises for people to become more embodied. We're going to have some pranayama exercises. And eventually, we're going to have partner stretches that will blend in with the sexology technique so that we don't jump to...
What did you say? Partner what? Partner stretches?
Partner stretches.
Okay.
So doing some Thai yoga massage with each other and some partner yoga so that we don't jump into sexual techniques, but people become familiar with touch, with touching each other. And, you know, a lot of people who are in intimate partnerships don't really have much experience with non-sexual intimate touching. So that's part of what we're going to explore as well, because this workshop is very much about creating intimacy, not just sexual pleasure, but really creating deeper, lasting fulfillment and intimacy in partnership, or if you're not in a partner, to first be able to cultivate that in yourself and then have that be available for you when you do have your next partnership.
But when you say intimate touch, that actually does sound sexual to me. How is it not sexual, intimate touch?
Intimate touch to me means massage or energy work or placing one's hand over another person's heart, touching the chakras in the body. All of that to me is intimate touch, and it's not sexual at all.
Oh, I see what you mean. That's intimate, like really deeply connecting with another. So that's part of it. And then with the sexology work that Tano has done, people can leave the workshop in a totally new relationship to their body and the other. That's the idea.
Alan, if I can interject, Alan, I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said that, because that new relationship with your body, I think, is the most important thing for people to starting to develop. I mean, the intimate touch thing is that intimacy has a certain energy to it, and that's the energy you want to be cultivating and circulating through you and your partner. But you have to do that with yourself first. So people want to develop a certain relationship with their own bodies that is full of reverence and intimacy. For example, when men just masturbate and ejaculate onto a tissue, they're showing no reverence for all of that vital life force that has just depleted them, that could have been used to invigorate and strengthen them. So when a man has a certain reverence and you realize how powerful men and women are with our sexual energies, we realize, oh my goodness, I don't want to waste this energy. This is so valuable to me. I want to cultivate it. And just that thought process develops a certain compassion, care, and reverence. Then once you have that with your own bodies, you can then start to develop that with your partner.
Yeah, no, I was
exactly.
just going to say...
You know, the sacredness of sexuality has really been extracted for the most part in Western culture. People are not taught or raised to think of their sexuality as sacred. Tano and I are trying to reintroduce that paradigm that your sexual energy, which is your vital life force energy, is precious, it's sacred, it's not to be wasted, it's not to be filled with lack of consciousness. And right. who you relate to sexually is very important.
Yeah, no, I agree. I know I'm with you, and I'm really happy you're doing this work because the sexual energy is the life force. It's what gives birth to us. It is the
That's
most
right.
sacred energy we have, and cultivating it cultivates who we are. Yeah, on all levels of sacredness. So we need to be taught a new reorientation to our sexual energy. And be explored. I think there's a whole sexual physiology that comes alive when we can start to go deeper into our sexual awareness. And another example is just by building the chi, just by building the ejaculate in the body, it increases the sperm count, which is, you know, being, attacked in a way by the polluted environments. But if by building the sperm count and choosing to ejaculate, when you want to reproduce, there's a better chance of reproducing. That's just a side
benefit. And having a very healthy, extraordinarily healthy child as well.
Yes, and you're very right, Alan, about one thing you said, is that we're in an environment where there's an attack on vitality, on male and female vitality. And so many things that we consume in our daily lives are actually depleting our testosterone in men, or making imbalance in the estrogen in women. And so it's right now it's more important than ever for men to reclaim a sacred relationship with their sexuality, so that they can start cultivating and protecting their testosterone or their estrogen and learning to cultivate it so that they can come together and balance them between each other.
So do you recommend any products, aphrodisiacs, gene tonics, ginseng? Do you work with any of those substances?
Yes, I do. I keep it on a minimum to a degree. I really give a list in the course of the kind of foods and herbs and supplements that promote testosterone in the body and those that promote and a good balanced estrogen in the body. So the people realize that slight alterations in their diet, even minimal, can start automatically increasing their health and vitality.
I get it. Okay, so like what kind of foods?
Well, for example, there's certain things that men should take out of their diet. I always work with that first. These are the things you want to be careful of. Soy is very bad for men these days. Even things that are like grapefruit are testosterone inhibitors. And all
these
things
mean soy, any type of soy, tofu?
Yeah, soy. Soy is one of the worst things for men at this time.
Really?
Soy
That's
is one food. Of the most processed foods
okay.
in existence now. I mean, at one point, I definitely believe it was healthy, but if you do any online research, you'll find that soy products are the number one genetically modified food source right now in America. And
stay away from tofu, you're saying.
I am. I'm saying, not for women, for men. Well, tofu will help.
Well, actually, even for women, it can create estrogen imbalances because soy increases estrogen levels. And you don't want, even as a woman, you don't want to have too too high a level of estrogen, you always want your estrogen and progesterone levels to be balanced. So, you know, processed food for anyone is not great.
Okay,
yes,
so
and I agree with what Sarah just said right there. The key is imbalance. It's not to be mistaken of men just need to increase their testosterone, because some men don't. Some men need to increase a yin energy in their body to balance it out. But learning to recirculate your body's energies almost has an effect of naturally balancing yourself out. That's one of the beauties about this ancient art, is that when you pull your energy up your body and you bring it to the top of your crown chakra and you circulate it down, it's being infused with so many different hormones, cranial secretions, all the energies from the organs, and the body has its own natural ability to heal itself and say, oh, wait, too much yang energy. And certain other secretions come out and help balance that out.
So, okay, so what foods then would be good to build that chi for men and women? I mean, you know, to counteract these environmental toxins. I mean, I know cutting out a bunch of things, but what do you recommend?
Superfoods are very helpful.
What did you say? Food?
Root.
Fruits?
Superfoods, like maca root, acai. For women, I know that it's very helpful to take DHA oils and omega 3, 6, and 9.
Mm-hmm.
Hormone balancing for women, especially for women who have premenstrual syndrome, helped me a lot with that. Flax oil, or you could get Udo's Choice 3, 6, 9, helped, very helpful. Maca root is also very helpful for women in particular, but I believe, maybe Tano, you know this, does it balance out male and female hormones, maca root?
Yep. And to add to that, I mean, things for women, flax seeds, beans, peas, lima beans, kidney beans, any of those, milk, brown rice, barley, oats, I mean, certain fruits like papayas, dates, apples, pomegranates, cherries, all of these are wonderful things for increasing estrogen and balancing it out.
What about chocolate?
Palmetto, fennel, all of those are excellent for women. And when you're looking at and men, definitely they need to have, you know, vitamins in their bodies like vitamin C, vitamin A, beta-carotene, B vitamins, omegas. Yes, maca roots, phenomenal. Ginseng, horny goat weed, tongkat. Lots of these nutrients that they can get to and increase their vitality and sexuality. I mean, foods that are just known to be great testosterone boosters for men is celery, oysters, avocados, nuts, berries, eggs, garlic. I mean, chocolate, phenomenal for both men and women. I mean, we're talking pure raw cacao chocolate. But all of those things are phenomenal for increasing their energy.
That's good to know.
And we will go over this in the course. We'll have a class.
Yeah, I have a whole list of things for people to go through. But one of my major things that I always let the students know is don't just take one of these lists and make the assumption that you just have to make that your entire diet, because you can do too much of a good thing and create an imbalance.
Yeah, too much heat, too much yang heat or, you know, generated heat.
Exactly.
But let's also go to another level. Okay, so we want to increase this orgasmic level. It increases the pleasure. Now let's just talk about the spiritual dimensions, like what that does to increase our awareness of who we are in a bigger way. How do you talk about that? And then Tano, you can tell us those levels too.
Well, one of the most disappointing things that I've experienced throughout my life is having an incredible, deep, profound sexual experience with my partner, and then after orgasm, him falling asleep 5 minutes later, or getting grumpy or in a bad mood, or suddenly being starving and totally disconnecting from me.
Mm-hmm.
I've never thought that that was something that was just normal, you know, that a man has an orgasm and then he's exhausted and depleted. And that's why I started studying sexology when I was in my early 20s, is because I noticed that phenomenon, and I thought there must be another way. Because for me, during orgasm and post-orgasm, that is the gateway to a profound spiritual experience. I've had many times where during or post-orgasm, I'm completely transported to another realm, you know, where there's a sense of luminosity. I mean, literally, where the room looks luminous, where my partner's face is completely luminous, where there's a kind of golden white light that's pervading everything. And I have no doubt, and I've always trusted, that sexuality is a gateway to spirituality in the most profound sense.
Right, so you went there, and the men stayed behind in bed asleep or whatever, but you didn't go there with your partner, and that is disappointing.
Well, I was able to go there with my partners before they ejaculated. You know, right. We were in a very beautiful space together. But then once they ejaculated, I was, you know, alone there. They came plummeting back to earth and were exhausted and needed to take care of their bodies and usually kind of were in a bad mood, to be honest.
Right. No, I agree. And I think ejaculation, what's in the sperm, whatever, what comes out of the male body at that point is the most precious, vital, fluid, full of the most amazing.
The elixir of life. It's the elixir of life.
Right. And it has this precious vitamin, mineral count. It takes from all parts of the body. It is the thing that needs to be cultivated inside of us to maintain vitality. I totally agree with what Tano's saying. And yes, losing that is we should do everything we can so we don't lose that, you know, and build.
And so there's many different levels of teaching. You know, the first level, like Tano said, is beginning to learn the fundamentals of working with one's own body. Eventually, you get to the point where you're working with your partner, and once you become familiar with the mechanics of what's involved, it's just like learning a musical instrument. You know, first you learn the scales, and, you know, you slowly over time get to the place where you can become a great improviser. When you're at the level where you can improvise with sexology, I think at that point it's definitely about experimenting with heightened states of sexual pleasure, but it's also really about the spiritual connection.
Right.
Because the sexual pleasure innately bleeds into a spiritual union. It just happens naturally.
Well, when you're really engaged in deep, prolonged intercourse, there's a losing, at least my experience, a sense of oneself and really merging with the other and not knowing where you begin, they end, and a sort of transcendence of the body itself. You become aware of consciousness in the body, and that is a spiritual experience for me. So,
And if I interject, I'll say that experience lingers way after both parties have finished cuddling after sex. I mean, I believe that when you're doing the sexology and you're moving energy through your chakras, each of those chakras represents a certain level of your energetic field. And when you activate that and infuse that with your energy and both parties are doing it, you are now sharing a single energetic field. And that's real unity. And that unity is so powerful. And that's that unity you feel afterwards. And what Sarah's saying is correct. If all of a sudden a man ejaculates and releases that, he's shrinking his energetic field. His energy to protect itself because of this depletion has to sink into the body and try to hold on to whatever energy they have right now.
Right.
And you break from your partner. But when that never occurs and you have an expanding feeling, and your energy expands from each chakra, your energy comes out, and the two of you just have this larger bubble of an energetic field that you share. And then after being together at a later feeling, you could get up, go to the other room and do something, and even if you're further away from each other, there's this unbelievable connection that is shared, almost a psychic connection, where you can sense what they're feeling. You're almost one person to a degree.
Right, and I think that psychic connection actually remains in a way forever. I mean, I can still connect in with those moments I had with those partners that are – those presences are still with me. They transcend time and space when you've had that deep about psychic, physical, sexual bonding.
That's absolutely. Yes. That's my experience as well.
And so, but you know, I also was looking to why men ejaculate. They can choose. I mean, it's a practice, of course, but there's reasons that, you know, people do ejaculate if they want to feel good. It's sort of like a drug. If they haven't worked out other areas of their life, if they, you know, are feeling self-pity or whatever, they need, you need to work on the psychological aspects of ejaculation, not just...
Of course. Exactly. It becomes in many ways exactly like doing drugs. Because doing drugs kills brain cells, depletes you, and it gives you this sense of void in your body. And this sense of void, almost like a sense of death, becomes an endorphin rush for the body. And then you collapse. But a prolonged experience of that is unbelievably bad for you. And people do that because they don't yet understand, or they haven't yet experienced a cultivating pleasure, a pleasure where you've increased brain cells, you've increased health, and this sort of internal explosion of intoxication that occurs.
Yes.
And once a person discovers that, they don't go back. I mean, I remember when I fully discovered that sensation, I never wanted to ejaculate again. And since then, I have occasionally ejaculated just to see, wait, am I missing something? Am I wrong? And experiment between the two sensations. And I've never once had a pleasurable ejaculation since. I've felt it. I've been like, okay, yep, that's what I remembered as being so great. But now in comparison to the ejaculation experience, it's nothing. It's nothing to come close to it. And it's gone so quickly, and then I just feel weak. So I think that it's just a lack of people's knowledge. They don't know yet. They haven't and knowing not just intellectually. You can read a book and know something intellectually. But to know it innately because you've experienced it, that's transformative.
Yes. Sarah, what were you saying, Sarah?
The difference between... I just want to say one thing on the tail of what Tano just expressed. The difference between dissipating, release-oriented pleasure, like building up tension and then releasing that tension, and so it's a dissipating pleasure. The difference between that and accumulative pleasure, where there's actually no need for the tension buildup to be released, because there isn't a buildup of tension in the same way. That energy, which is experienced as tension, is being circulated throughout the entire body, infusing the cells of the body, the organs of the body. And then, you know, if you're really fortunate, you have a partner and you're exchanging this energy back and forth, there's nothing better than that.
There
would be no reason to ever go back to dissipating, release-oriented pleasure.
Well,
which,
you know,
like Tano said, is very much like a drug. It feels good for a moment, and then you're exhausted.
Right. I totally agree. I also want to say, though, not only do the men have to be re-educated, the women, too, because, you know, there's certain women that they think, and I've been with some, that think they're being deprived if you don't ejaculate. Do you know what I mean?
Yo, I could definitely say that it's an interesting thing with any of my partners when the moment comes sexually where I have to explain myself that the orgasm I just experienced is not relating to any ejaculation and I'm not going to ejaculate. And because it's such a foreign concept, women do by nature feel almost like, oh my God, you're not experiencing a fullness with me. You're not going all the way. This is not reaching the same peak. And you're right, they just need to be re-educated to realize that they too have a similar thing. It's not just men. I mean, with women, when a woman orgasms, her secretions enter her vaginal canal. It's not as dangerous as for men because most of it gets absorbed back into the tissues. But it doesn't get circulated through the body. So they never experience the orgasmic ejaculation that occurs when you bring that orgasmic energy up the spine and it goes through its alchemetic transformative processes, and then you can feed the body.
So, Sarah, talk about re-educating women, but also that internal process as well.
Well, I think for a lot of women, it's pretty easy to let go of the idea that ejaculatory orgasm is necessary, as long as I think women just want to know that their partners are experiencing bliss and pleasure and that they haven't somehow failed in the sexual experience with their partners. I think once women understand that it's possible for a man to have even deeper physical pleasure not ejaculating, the problem is solved.
And to give them deeper pleasure because of that as well, you know. That's part of it.
I'm sorry, what's that, Ellen?
I said to give, because of non-ejaculation, to give the woman deeper pleasure as a result of
it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, maybe there's some women out there who are very attached to ejaculatory orgasms, but all the women that I've ever talked to about this have been pretty easy to change their mind as soon as they know that it's possible for a man to ejaculate and experience even deeper pleasure than he was with his ejaculation.
I don't know why the concept is so foreign to many people. It's like peeing.
I don't either. It's been a mystery my whole life.
Me too. It's like I tell people, it's like when you have to pee, you just don't pee because you feel like peeing. You actually learn to control whether or not and where you want to urinate. And then it's the same sort of thing.
I agree, Alan, completely.
Yeah, so it's like, why shouldn't that? And that should be taught in every, like you started at 20, it should be taught when men start to ejaculate. And
it should
of course,
be part of puberty.
Yes, you know, as part of puberty.
It should definitely be something that is not taboo. It should be discussed. And Alan, you couldn't be more correct. I mean, this whole addiction to ejaculation, I think, is relatively new for humanity. I don't believe that cavemen and Neanderthals were running around just ejaculating all day because it felt good. I think the body was just more in tune like animals, that when we need to procreate, we do this.
Right. You know, women lose their energy by menstruating. You know, there's a practice in the Taoist philosophy, slaying the red dragon, and I just wonder where that fits into this. Do you know about that, Sarah, about stopping the menstrual cycles and pulling in the essence?
Yes, I have never actually attempted to stop my menstrual cycle, but I've worked a lot with shortening my menstrual cycle. And also, I had a lot of difficult issues around menstruation when I was younger and extremely bad premenstrual syndrome and huge emotional swings and a lot of physical pain, physical cramping. So I've done a lot of work over the years, but I've never actually attempted to stop my menstrual cycle altogether, no.
Well,
Alan,
I think
let me interject. It's a really interesting point you bring up with the menstruation because it's very similar to the ejaculation in men. It's just on a totally different time frame where men can have these buildups of energy that they release on a regular basis. Women once a month have this buildup of energy. And the reason why they menstruate is because the body cannot handle that energy if it's not being circulated. It becomes stagnant and very dangerous for them. Just have this massive buildup of power and energy in their sexual glands. So to protect themselves, the body naturally just sends it out in blood and tissue. And that's why a woman is unbelievably exhausted and depleted during that cycle.
And going through mood swings because
I was going to say, Alan, that once a woman learns how to circulate her energy, her microcosmic orbit, she's able to pull more of that ovulating energy that comes from menstruation through her body to replenish her orgasms. And the body has a natural, has less natural need to release those energies from the bodies. So just by doing the practice, the menstruation cycle slowly starts getting lesser and more tamed because you're able to handle this force of energy and it's not stagnating in your lower chakras.
Mm-hmm. Do you know the teachings of Sunyata Saraswati, the jewel in the lotus? And the have you met him?
No, I have not met him. No.
Oh, he's someone I think you would really appreciate. He combines the Tibetan, the Taoist, and the tantric practices to create his own ways of doing some of the stuff we've been talking about here. Can you give us a short little exercise? I mean, we're sort of coming down the last 10 minutes or so, but you talked about some of the practices you're going to do in the course this weekend. And when is that? Can you give us the specifics first, Sarah? And then maybe you can talk us through a little exercise, Tano. Yeah. Sarah?
The workshop begins on April 26th, the evening of April 26th from 6 to 8:30 p.m. It's all day Saturday, all day Sunday. And it's at She Creates Change, which is in Chelsea. The best way to learn about the program is to check out my website, which is sarahbarab.com.
Spell that. Can you spell Sarah Barab?
Sarah Barab is S-A-R-A-H, B as in boy, A-R-A-B as in boy, .com.
Okay. It's all listed there.
And all of the information about the dates, the times, the cost, et cetera, is on the website. Location is on the website. Also, we are offering an early bird discount. So anybody that signs up for the workshop and registers online before the 20th will receive $100 off.
Oh, that's good.
So we would like to fill it up, and it's going to be an amazing workshop. We've really been working on this for over a year. So
couples and singles, men and women, it's a safe environment to
It's a totally safe environment. There will be no nudity. There will be no explicit sexual acts performed. But we will be talking a lot about sexuality and encouraging people to open up and share their fears, their doubts, their hesitations. I'm trained, and I have a degree in psychology, and I'm trained in core energetics, and I'm definitely able to hold the space for whatever kind of emotional stuff comes up, if that should happen. Tano and I are both very confident that whatever comes up in this workshop will be healing and transformational.
Great. So, Tano, do you want to
lead us
through?
I'm going to have to wrap up with you. So, do you have any last questions with me?
You what? Say that again. You what?
I'm going to have to wrap up. Oh. Get out of here. So, any other questions you want to ask me at the moment?
I just want to know. Can you give us a little brief outline of, let's say, like a passive energy moving exercise? We don't have to go into the higher end, but like a simple thing that people can take and even start to practice if they're, listening now?
Okay. Yes. One of the first things a person wants to do is locate their vitality muscle, the PC muscle in the perineum of the body. Mm-hmm. And that's the muscle that's either right between the testicles and the anus or the vagina and the anus. And it's the muscle that you utilize to stop urination. If you're just going to the bathroom and urinating, just squeezing that muscle is going to stop the flow of urine. That muscle is very, very important. And strengthening that muscle is what is needed in order to prevent the energetic leakage out of the body. And it's also the muscle used in men to prevent the semen from coming out of the penis. Mm-hmm. So what you do is you begin squeezing in pulsations, that muscle, light little contractions at first. You just start getting a little rhythm, as if you're first stopping yourself from urinating, then relaxing, then squeezing again, then relaxing. And you keep your tongue on the roof of the mouth, even though at the very beginning it doesn't seem like it's necessary because energy is probably not moving up the back channel in a massive amount. You never want to take a chance. You always want to keep the two orbits connected. But in just practicing squeezing that muscle, and I would say doing 100 repetitions, just like squeeze, relax, squeeze, relax, squeeze, relax, squeeze, relax. Doing that repetitively, maybe just one set of 100 times a day, will start activating the vitality muscle to trigger production of that vital energy in the body. Mm-hmm. So it automatically stimulates the growth of this vital energy that we want to circulate and cultivate in our bodies.
Right. And go ahead, Sarah. What?
And this is known in all yogic traditions, Mula Bandha, mm-hmm. Engaging the perineum, bringing the energy up into the Dantian area, and sometimes even consciously bringing that energy up to the seven chakras. But this is known in every tradition, whether it's the Tibetan yoga practices, Hindu yogas, I'm sure Sufis and Kabbalists and all the wisdom traditions have some knowledge of the importance of the perineum muscle.
Right,
different,
definitely.
Words for it in different traditions.
Actually, when you and then also you can fine tune it. I noticed there were sort of three different types of muscles when I really worked on those areas. You know what I mean? It gets subtler the more mm-hmm. familiar you are with your mm-hmm. own physiology.
Yes.
But okay, just one more. So if men are going to ejaculate, I mean, let's say they're in that moment, is there any technique that you recommend so they can, you know, not do that and harness the energies? I mean,
the reason I say no, Alan, is simply because I would not ever encourage a man to stop his ejaculation until he has learned to open up his microcosmic orbit, or as I say, the back channel. Because an excess of stagnant energy down around the prostate will just create an imbalance. And our goals in life, in unity, is always to find balance. So I would never have them do that. I would have them do other basic exercises and just try to refrain from whatever addictive quality it is that they need to ejaculate on such a large scale.
I see. That's really good advice there. That's a really good thing. I think you're absolutely right.
Can develop prostate issues mm-hmm. as a man if you're about to ejaculate and the sperm has already gone into your vas deferens and you block yourself from coming. That's not particularly helpful and actually can cause problems over time. That's why it's so important to learn these exercises from someone like Tano, who's been trained for so many years, and he can really teach men how to do it properly so that they're not injuring themselves or creating prostate issues down the road.
So the exercise will create prostate health and awareness.
Exactly. This is the reason why a lot of doctors say, oh, it's very healthy to ejaculate. You must never stop ejaculation, because they don't know how to circulate the energy or that that's even possible. And of course, if the sperm and semen is already in the vas deferens, it's too late at that point. You do not want to block that.
Right, exactly. So it's of course, doctors aren't even aware of the energy potential and the idea of moving energy with intention. But, you know, we're re-educating. So, Tano, do you give private sessions, or what's your availability? What do you do, like, when you're not teaching workshops with this information?
I do. I mean, most of my experience is teaching privately. So, I mean, people that show up there, they'll be able to reach out to me and get private sessions, and anyone that wants to just has to contact Sarah and she can arrange a private.
Okay, and you're based in L.A. Do you do this regularly in L.A. as far as teaching?
I do.
Is this your full-time thing or you do other things?
I do more martial arts teaching than I do sexology.
I see. Do you combine them together at all?
I do, but only selectively. They're two different practices. And since I learn them differently, in order to honor those systems, I teach them differently.
I see. Okay. Well, great. I mean, do you have a particular website, or do you just use Sarah's as far as the sexology workshop?
For now, you can best reach him through my website.
Great. Okay. Any closing words you want to say, Sarah, about – you can also talk a little bit about your film and the whole – I know you had a really successful Kickstarter.
Sure. Let's let Tano go, because I know he has to run.
Okay.
And then you and I can stay on the phone a little longer.
Okay, a little bit.
Okay,
thank
excellent.
You, Tano DiCarlo, teacher of sexology, coming to New York. Thank you so much for being a guest. And I look forward to meeting with you, connecting, and you know, studying some of this beautiful wisdom that you cultivated. Thank you.
Excellent. Alan, thank you so much. I really appreciate being on your show. Have a wonderful night. And Sarah, have a wonderful night. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Take care.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. Have a good night.
Thank you. Talk to you soon. So, Sarah, it's kind of funny. You've known him since high school, and you are on parallel paths, isn't it?
Yeah. It was really a shock to connect after we hadn't connected for so long, for so many years, and then realized that we had both been living in Thailand, India, and Nepal, studying sexology, studying Tibetan Buddhism, doing long meditation retreats. It was really quite something.
Where'd you go to high school? Where was this?
Went to LaGuardia High School of Performing Arts.
Oh, in New York City?
Music and art. Yes, in New York City. Mm-hmm. And
so
we were each other's first relationship.
Oh, cute. And you're
first love.
that's sweet. And that's, and now you're like back kind of sharing that wisdom together.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting karma we have with each other.
But
for sure.
So how does this fit in with the big film project you're doing, and talk about that project and, you know, how it all fits together for you?
Well, my film Naked Mind is about meditation and neuroscience and studying the effects of meditation on the brain, and also what happens when meditation is brought in and taught to charnel ground sort of places in the world, such as prisons, mental hospitals, where people are having a very difficult time. And so it's an exploration of what is possible through meditation, and also when meditation maybe isn't helpful. And that's, we're exploring that as well with some of Lilith B. Britton's work on spiritual emergencies and when it's not a good idea to meditate if you're on the verge of having a mental breakdown.
Oh, wait, go into that a little more, because that's an interesting perspective. So what do you mean not good? What would meditation do to someone who's on the edge there?
Well, Willoughby Britton's work, she's an amazing psychiatrist and neuroscientist, and she's been working with so-called mentally ill for many years. And for quite a lot of mentally ill people, in her view, what they've had is a spiritual emergency. A lot of people who end up in mental hospitals do have a meditation practice. They usually don't have a teacher or any sort of lineage that they're a part of, and they can get very lost. And for people whose egos are not strong and grounded, getting heavily involved in meditative practices can actually be dangerous. So the film goes into that aspect as well, because, you know, I'm not making a film that is trying to just promote meditation as great. By and large, I think for the vast majority of people, meditation is extremely helpful. And I know for me, it's been the number one most helpful thing that I've done in my life. And I've done a lot of things. Meditation wins. But in terms of the film, we're exploring from a lot of different angles. When meditation is helpful, when sometimes it's not, what's happening biologically, when people do long meditation retreats, what happens to the brain chemistry? Is it possible to maintain neuroplasticity through meditation, you know, keeping the brain young and healthy and vital for well into old age? Sleep cycles, you know, we're really engaging in an exploration of what meditation is and what does it do.
Well, how does the meditation aspect fit into the sexology, the stuff we were just talking about, you know, how do they work? How do you merge those two together?
Well, I've always had an interest in both. I'm not entirely sure how they're related, other than deep, profound spiritual sexual experiences are very similar in my own personal experience to deep meditative experiences. There isn't that much difference. Like I was saying earlier, the most profound spiritual experiences I've had in my life have been either in long retreat or in sexual union. And they're actually not that different.
Right. So the purpose of your film is to explore all aspects of meditation, but what do you hope to accomplish by? I mean, what do you want people to come away with from the film?
What I really want people to come away with after seeing this film is a sense that there's such a vastness to the experience of being human.
Yes.
That there's really no limit to what we're capable of if we can tap into the innate powers of the mind. And most people are walking around with this incredibly self-limited view. And there's a pervasive, you know, collective, cultural sense that life is, you know what it is. It's not particularly vast or magical, or it's just, you know, you're trying to get through it. Just get through your day. go home, turn on the TV. And that, to me, is incredibly heartbreaking because I spent a lot of time living in Nepal and India with people who I consider to be extremely awake, conscious meditation masters. And I what I brought back from that experience is a sense that it really doesn't have to be this way. We are capable, as human beings, of waking up to the innate magic that is being alive. As
right.
my teacher, Trungpa Rinpoche, called it ordinary magic, the ordinary magic of everyday life.
Mm.
If we're in touch with the ordinary magic of everyday life, there is no need to do all the numbing and boredom-producing activities that we, you know, this massive fear of boredom and doing whatever activities we feel the need to do in order to get out of this perceived
right.
dead prison of a life.
Right. You know, the other important thing about meditation is understanding states of consciousness, for me. And when you go in to your own mind, you realize there's many levels of awareness and there's a sort of internal navigation that is a terrain, in a sense. There's levels and levels of the self. I would say we're just as infinitely inward as we are if we look out into space out there. There's just as much of a space in here. And meditation
Absolutely.
Navigates
Absolutely.
Us through those spaces, and it is magic to realize our infinite nature. And that's one of the great gifts of meditation.
Exactly. And to not have to be limited by such a small notion of self. I
yes.
think one of the things that meditators have reported on, by and large, is an experience of the small, limited version of self begins to expand and unfold into this incredible, spacious sense of unity. And once you've experienced that or tapped into that, it's very painful to come back to the small, individual, fearful, protective self.
Well, you know, I think, though, we have to walk the balance between the two, you know, and we can, but, you know, I think we can be both. I think it may be painful if you choose that, but I think we can live with the awareness of being the big self and the beauty of having that in the small self. I think there's a magic to that as well. And, of course, the great teachers.
I agree with that. However, I think that how you be your smaller self can change.
Yeah.
Once you've tasted the larger self, how you be in the world as your smaller individualized ego can actually be very different, can go through a transformation.
Yeah, and that's, I think, also what people are learning from all the near-death experiences that people are writing about now, those brilliant books. Dying to Be Me is an incredible book that talks about that place of expanded self. And, of course, it's always in us. It's always with us. We just have to become aware of it. And, yeah, meditation, absolutely. I remember the first time I really meditated, I went so deep. And then I heard the sounds of waves crashing on the shore. And what I realized it was everyone else getting up. But to me, I was like on some sea of tranquility somewhere. It was just amazing.
That's wonderful. My first meditative experience was very different from that.
Oh, really?
Very painful, yeah.
Oh, painful? Why was it painful?
Well, I started to notice the noise in my mind. It became very obvious. My emotional states, my negative emotional states, my negative thought patterns, which had always been somewhat in the background, started to become very, very clear, very upfront and conscious. And it, for me, you know, it took a while until I got to a place in meditation where I felt any sense of tranquility.
But you know, if you have the awareness that these are mental states, you also realize they're, in a way, not you, that you have, you're the observer of it. So, you know, I mean, the awareness can bring up,
still, pain is pain. You know,
right.
I mean, it's definitely nice as a thought, but when you're in pain, you're in pain, you know? And I think one of the things for me that meditation has taught is not so much about getting beyond the difficulties of being a human being, but simply cultivating an ability to be with my various states of consciousness, my physical experiences, and so forth. Being with, having a big enough container that I can experience whatever it is moving through me without attaching to it too strongly, although definitely I'm, you know, not over attachments by any means, but better than when I was younger. Not attaching, overly attaching to the experience, and also not shunning it.
Right.
Like
right.
feelings of sadness or grief, allowing it to move through. But I also had a near-death experience 7 years ago, and I had already been practicing and studying meditation at that point for 13 years. And when I was in this car accident and I actually did leave my body and had, you know, very sort of typical near-death experience, I realized that what all my teachers had been talking about, which had occurred for me as very cerebral and, you know, inferential knowledge, but certainly not experiential, suddenly I got it. I got it in my own experience. And that helped a lot, because before that I wasn't really sure if I could trust these cave-dwelling yogi Tibetan guys, you know?
Right. Once you get it, though, and you know it's real. But, yeah, until you get it, it's just a theory, and it's like, so what? And, yeah, it's the experience that definitely shifts the reality. So tell me about the film. You're focusing on five different people, five different forms of meditation. What is it? The process?
We're not really focusing on five different forms of meditation, but we're going into different aspects of life. So the main person that we're focusing on in the film is an extraordinary woman called Machik. You've actually interviewed her, I believe.
I love her. She has really done an amazing, simple, beautiful thing. Yes. So, yes,
yeah.
tell people about her.
Absolutely incredible. And she's come from a very difficult background. You know, she's had a hard time in life. She has had cancer and survived it. Her childhood was very difficult. She was suicidal for a period of her life. And through meditation and doing long retreats and her relationships with her teachers, she's really become an extraordinary, extraordinary awake being, as you know, because you met her.
And I want to say she spent 40 days in meditation in a dark room with no food and no water, and has had some profound, I mean, most people don't even think that's possible. And of course, your film is going to investigate how it is possible,
So we're going to be monitoring one of her dark retreats. It may be, you know, it's up to her how long she wants to do it for. It may be 3 weeks, or she may do the whole 49 days or even longer. Mm-hmm. We're committed to having infrared cameras on her 24/7. She's going to be without food and without water. She meditates in a meditation box. The box does emit steam, so her body gets some moisture, but she doesn't actually drink or eat anything for the duration of the retreat. And she's done many of these.
And she sits up right cross-legged. I mean, that alone is a
thing. That's right.
To sit that way for 40 days. And she said, the only thing that sort of bothered her was her hips were sort of like, you know, getting a little, you know, stiff or something.
It takes her a while to be able to walk again and to move. Her legs have to be moved for her very, very slowly, because her hips are more or less fused in that sitting position.
It's incredible.
Point, I think her body is also somewhat used to it, because she's done so many of these retreats. And we are hoping, and it's very likely, that Dr. Richard Davidson, internationally famous neuroscientist who's been studying the effects of meditation on the brain for the past 35 years and works very closely with Thich Nhat Hanh, the Dalai Lama, is going to be monitoring Machik. Mm-hmm. So that's our hope, and we're waiting to hear back from him.
I see. Well, that sounds great. So once you do this, so you'll show her experience. I mean, is it that she's not an unusual person in the sense that anyone could do this, but she is unusual because she has done it, you know? But we do
have that.
Well, I
don't really think anyone could do this, to be honest. I think it's a very rare person who is capable of sitting in a box in a pitch black dark room for 49 days without food or water.
No, but I mean, physically, any one of us, if we train, could do that.
Yeah.
Physically, I mean, how many of us can do it mentally, emotionally, psychologically? Not many, I agree. But we all have the potential to actually doing it, I think. Don't you? Isn't
yes.
it? Don't you?
Yes.
She's not different than that.
That's right. And she's a very good example of somebody who's come from a tremendous amount of difficulty. And that's one of the reasons why we're interested in her as a subject in the film, because she's not somebody that was born into cushy circumstances and just had everything extremely easy in her life. Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
She had a very difficult life. She's experienced a lot of violence. She's been suicidal. She's been through cancer. She's not had an easy ride.
And she's so young. How old? She's like, what, 28?
She just turned 30. Yeah, she's very young.
Incredible. And she's also, having had this experience, she is coming, she looks at the world very differently. And that's what I really appreciate about her. She has a different level of consciousness, of awakening, of perspective, a sense of herself, the transcendent nature of all that is. And she sort of lives in that awareness in some ways.
She really does. She is living that awareness. I mean, I've had the good fortune of being around her quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When we were filming her in Seattle, my film partner and I were sleeping on the floor of her little room where she lived at the time. And we were with her for several weeks. When she came to New York, she was also staying with me. And so I've really been around her quite a bit. And I've never actually seen her waver from a state of peace. Not once.
I think, though, she is different than a lot of the people who so-called have reached whatever level, because I think she is very human and she's also very feeling, and she is very in touch with her sense of feeling and emotion. And
definitely. I mean, she's real. It doesn't mean, mean that because she has this equanimity that she's not real. She's very real. And she can get angry and she can experience strong emotions. It's just that her basic default mechanism appears to be an extreme gentle equanimity. I don't know if I can use the word extreme and equanimity in the same sense.
No, I think you can. And I agree. And it's also, in a way, childlike, what I noticed, very childlike, and have a sense of wonder and gratitude towards the world. Yes.
Yes. And that magic that I was talking about earlier, Machik absolutely gets that. Mm-hmm. There's a sense of not knowing what everything is. So there's this childlike wonderment and sense of awe at just being alive moment by moment. And
right.
If there's anything that I can offer with this film, with Naked Mind, is I hope that it's that. I hope people walk away from watching the film with just a sense of, maybe this world is a lot richer and deeper and more profound than I was experiencing.
And ourselves, and maybe we are a lot
and
richer.
And ourselves, absolutely. And maybe through cultivating a meditation practice, I would begin to experience some of what is inside me and outside of me in a different way, in a more profound, infused with magic, infused with wonderment sort of way. Because that's what I've received through practicing meditation. And I can't even imagine living my life without having found meditation.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, you know, the thing about Majik is she told me in my interview that just one day sitting in the dark with no food and maybe some water just changed her. That was like the beginning of something profound in her. Just one day. I mean, of course, that was the beginning of her journey, but that is something I think all of us could do at no extra cost. And I think I just think that's so powerful just to take that time for oneself. But what were you saying?
One of the things that Majik does in the film is she takes Pax and I into a dark retreat hut that she built herself in the middle of the woods. And she gives us an hour, just kind of taste of what dark retreat is about. And Pax and I, having been in this dark retreat hut just for 1 hour, coming out, there was a sense of being able to see more clearly, a profound shift in that we both felt in our nervous systems. There's something about being in pitch black, total darkness and silence, which is incredibly rejuvenating and relaxing for the nervous system. And she talks a lot about her experience. She gives a lot of teachings, really, just via the interviews that we have with her, in terms of why she does this practice, what happens for her, what happens to her mind, how she gets to know her mind in this incredibly subtle way. And it's really amazing to hear her talk about this, because when it's not a normal experience to have the opportunity to talk with such an advanced practitioner.
Yeah.
She's, in my view, an extremely advanced practitioner, and most of the people like her are actually in caves doing long-term retreats, or they're in three-year retreats, or they're living in some sort of remote area just doing their own practices. But Majik is totally available and accessible, and so it's very fortunate that we have her and that she's agreed to be in Naked Minds. And I'm just extremely excited to monitor her next retreat. And okay. And then, of course, there's a lot of other people that we're following as well in this film.
Right. There's other people you're following besides her, you're saying?
Yes. We're following Sweet Malls, who's an ex-convict meditation teacher. We're following him into prisons where he teaches meditation. We want to interview some of the inmates who have been through his Path of Freedom education system, where they're basically instructed in meditation practice and they begin to use their prison sentence as a meditation retreat. We also have Richard Davidson, the neuroscientist who's been studying the effects of meditation for 35 years on the brain specifically, and working with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. They actually started the Mind and Life Institute together. We have Willoughby Britton, another neuroscientist who, like I said earlier, is investigating the dark night of the soul, spiritual emergencies, when it's not a good idea to meditate, when meditation can push you over the edge into a psychotic breakdown.
Right, that does sound interesting.
We also have Johnny Nobueno, who's an amazing poet, social activist, ex-convict, ex-drug addict, and now through meditation has really pulled his life together, and he is a slam poet and getting quite a name for himself in Seattle, Portland area. So we've got a lot of really interesting characters who are all related through their meditation practice.
When are you doing you've done, of course, some filming. When are you going to do the bulk of the filming?
Well, production has been in process for 6 years. So Pax and I have been to 8 countries. We did all the filming that we need to do in the Asian countries, lots of interviews with meditation masters from Asia. And now we're focusing on production in the West. We just had a big fundraising campaign. We're going to be filming for the entire summer and we're going to finish as much production as we possibly can and hopefully enter into post-production in the fall or winter. The film should be finished within a year.
Great, great. You know, I was also thinking of Majik talking about her needing, you know, for people, some dark room retreats. You know, why not, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And
one of the great things about this film project is that there's a whole outreach program connected to it. So when the film is finished, Fleet Mall and possibly Machik and I will be going around to various places, definitely prisons and veterans hospitals, high schools and universities, in rural areas or inner cities, places where people don't normally hear Dharma teachings or meditation instructions. We're going to teach meditation, and we're going to create a community where anybody who wants to learn to meditate or wants ongoing meditation instruction, wants to connect with other meditators, we're going to be providing that. So
great.
The outreach program is, for me, is definitely just as important as the film.
Well, so give your website. We should wrap up, but give your website that people can reach you again.
Sure. It's nakedmindthefilm.org.
Great. Thanks, Sarah.
Nakedmindthefilm.org. And my personal website is sarahbarab.com.
When are you going to be back in New York?
Day after tomorrow.
Oh, me too. Well, let's talk then, okay?
Okay, great, Ellen. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for being a guest on New Realities. I was talking to Tana DiCarlo and Sarah Barab about their upcoming sexology workshop and Sarah's movie about meditation, Naked Mind. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com. And you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening. Good night.